Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Dusty White, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Cormdale Church. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about the question of American solidarity.
But first, we're also coming up on Chris Hemmelman's farewell episode of the Wednesday Conversation.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, it's going to be a few weeks from now is Chris's last episode. And so before we dive into the topic for today, I want to talk with our listeners about a few things we're thinking about and changing going forward. Chris Hemmelman has been a fixture on this podcast for 11 years. Chris's departure from his seat around this table has given us a chance to step back and ask, okay, what do we want the next iteration of the Wednesday Conversation to be? If Chris isn't sitting around the table, what do we want to do with this podcast? And that has just dovetailed with some broader conversations we've been having around how do we best serve our church? How do we best serve the church? How do we best serve our listeners? So we're going to make a few changes going forward. The biggest one you're going to notice is we want to add video. A lot of podcasts now are, it's primarily YouTube.
The people are demanding it.
The people are demanding it, but more importantly, we've been doing this for 12 years. And when we started it, it was just audio podcasts were just the thing everybody did. And now the whole ecosystem has really shifted in the direction of video. Dusty, someone told me recently that YouTube TV is the number one app on smart TVs now.
Yeah.
So the fact that many, many people are starting to access their content through YouTube means we want to be available on that platform. And so we are going to add video to the Wednesday Conversation. What that means for you is however you listen now, you can keep doing that. But if you want to start using a platform like Spotify or YouTube that has video embedded, you're going to, starting when we relaunch the Wednesday podcast, you're going to have the capacity to watch on video. So because we want to make that change and a few other formatting changes, we're going to take a break from mid-February until April 15th. So we got three or four or five episodes yet here before we take that break, but I just wanted to let listeners know that we're going to take a couple months off between February and April to sort of retool, repopulate the studio with some new equipment, and we will launch again April 15th. I don't know if it will be called the Wednesday Conversation or the Wednesday, I don't know. We're going to, you know, we might even rename it, doesn't
it? Rebranding.
We might rebrand it. I had some thoughts for names, but I tried them out with my team yesterday and they were like, yeah, those names aren't awesome. So I'm not going to put them on the airwaves because apparently my own team doesn't even like them.
Yeah.
But it's okay. So anyways, listeners, just so you know, we got four episodes ahead of us here. Then we'll take the last episode we'll release February 18th, and then we'll take a break until April 15th. So you'll have a few months where you won't see a new episode in your feed. And then we'll be back right up in your face with video content.
And we'll know if you are a listener based on if you heard this episode, because you'll be asking in February, like, hey, you haven't recorded.
How come I haven't seen you guys in a while? And that lets you know that on April 15th, we will begin once again receiving your snacks. So
yeah, snacks on video.
On video. We will show them off. Yeah, you'll be able to see what we're eating, not just hear about it.
But Chris said he's going to send snacks, so we feel good about it.
So take note of those changes. For those of you that are listeners, followers who appreciate this podcast, thanks for your engagement over these many years, and we're excited to add a video component. Today, we wanted to talk about the way Dusty framed the topic, the question of American solidarity. And let me explain why that topic is interesting to me or how we arrived at that topic. I read an article recently from Jake Meter, which we'll get to in a minute, where he's sort of describing some of the shifts in American conservatism over the last 10 years. And that made me think of a book that came out last year from James Davison Hunter. For those of you who are readers, you probably know of Hunter. He's probably the foremost academic sociologist. He or Christian Smith are probably the two biggest names in American academic sociology. Both of them are Christians. Christian Smith is a Catholic, James Davison Hunter, a Protestant. Both of these guys, though, are just excellent in their field. And Hunter's book last year, I did a review of this book for the Gospel Coalition. The title of the book is Democracy and Solidarity. And Dusty, you can see from the cover image.
Yeah. What it's cut down the middle.
Yeah, it's a torn piece of paper. The whole thesis that James Davison Hunter is advancing in this book is that the thing that's fraying in America is our sense of solidarity. And so his whole point is, hey, democracy was always about how can we have a sense of solidarity among a bunch of different kinds of people. He names the motto of our country, E Pluribus Unum, out of many one. And he's saying America has always been this experiment in solidarity. And Hunter, in the introduction of this book, says, hey, if you're feeling like kind of things have been weird the past few years and it feels like the whole nation is more tense and things are more polarized, you're not crazy.
Everybody's feeling.
And his thesis is, it's because our solidarity is fraying. Now, Hunter, in a very academic sociology way, is trying to tackle that problem. But what I thought was most interesting about the book is just him naming that problem, because it helped me, Dusty, go, okay, a lot of what people are, I have people almost every week grab me on a Sunday and be like, man, things seem real polarized. Or I just got a text this week from a friend who's like, man, I'm kind of worried about where things are right now in the world. It just feels like we're all feeling this sense of like, man, you look at what's going on with like immigration and debates over that. You look at what's going on with Trump trying to try to take over Greenland. And I mean, just everybody has an opinion on everything. And it seems like it's very sort of like stark, polarized. You're either this or you're that. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of debates where we're like, oh, let's just kind of, we're kind of on the same page here. We just have a little difference of how we see it.
Yeah. And that's different than when we were growing up and older generations saying things like, oh yeah, you know, it's the world's just going to hell in a handbasket. It's different than that.
Why is it different? Yeah. It feels more like it actually is going down.
It feels like the rupturing is more intense.
Yes.
than just a new generation.
Yes. And so I wanted to tackle for us as Christians, how can we think about the question of American solidarity? I want to get a layer below the sort of fractures on the surface, because I think all of us feel that. If you're on Facebook or you're on Instagram or, you know, you interact with a family member, you're probably sensing, yeah, man, things feel very polarized. I want to get underneath just the feeling of that and ask, okay, how should we as Christians think about the question of how can we regain some measure of solidarity, or can we? Hunter in this book is basically saying, maybe we can't. It's possible that there is no hope for renewing American solidarity. But he ends his book with basically him saying, I want to have hope, and so I'm going to have hope. But this article that Jake Meter wrote recently at Mere Orthodoxy is a way of addressing this question. What is it that grants us, that gives America solidarity? And so I sort of want to work in three movements. You'll see where we're going here in a second, but I want to give three different answers to that question. So the colonial American answer, of course, was that what gives us solidarity is, you know, this Constitution and Bill of Rights, this sort of founding, this set of founding documents where we establish together, hey, we're going to build a country. It's going to be built around this set of rights and responsibilities. And that worked pretty well for the first couple hundred years of our country. James Davison Hunter points out, you still had the Civil War, you still had the problem of slavery. So, you know, we were still falling short of our ideal of actually all men are created equal. But the whole national story was a working out of, okay, how are we going to resolve that contradiction? You get into the 20th century after World War II, and Jake Meter points out in his article here that after World War II, there's this sort of new vision of what is going to grant and create solidarity among human beings. And Rusty Reno calls this the post-war consensus. Other writers have talked about this same thing. And the best way to describe what people refer to as the post-war consensus is that, hey, what's going to rebuild human solidarity is commitment to free market economies and like each individual maximizing their own, you know, economic productivity. So the post-war consensus after World War II is where you get NATO and the United Nations and all this stuff. You know, it's this sort of like, hey, let's build a global economy. Let's rebuild free markets and healthy trade among nations. Think about what's happened after World War II. Japan is decimated. Germany is decimated. France is decimated. The U.S. has just spent a ton of money on war debt. You know, the whole world is reeling from the effects of World War II. And so the big question for human beings is, what unites us? How do we rebuild around something shared? And the consensus was, well, what we share is we can share a commitment to sort of like economic productivity. And Jake Meter wants to say that's kind of what's broken down. If you ask like what's wrong now, it's that more and more people have realized that was a bad attempt at solidarity. If you think about the question or the debate of globalism versus populism, this is kind of the essence of it. The post-war consensus was basically, hey, Dusty, instead of like celebrating your identity as an American or a Midwesterner or a, you know, whatever, what if you're just like a citizen of the global society? So it's sort of like, be less nationalistic, be less focused on where you live in the world, and be more, let's just all be friends with each other across boundaries and sort of create a world where we can trade freely with one another, where you can maximize your economic productivity and live the life you want to live. Now, the problem with that is that all of that is based on what Jake Meter calls a naked individualism. It's based on, hey, you know who you need to care about is just like you. How do you live the best life you can? And explicitly, the post-war consensus, sort of global, what's called liberal democracy, if you want to think of it that way, liberalism in the political sense, is this idea that, I'm going to read a quote here from Jake Meter. A society is autonomous actors creating identities from nothing while rejecting all forms of unchosen identity. To borrow a phrase from the Christian ethicist Stanley Hauerwas, the dominant narrative of the post-war consensus was that I have no story except the story I chose when I had no story. That's such a great line. I have no story except the story I chose when I had no story. The idea behind this sort of free market liberal individualism is, hey, you're not defined by the family you come from, the people you're a part of, the part of the world you live in. What you are is an individual self-determining actor who can just maximize your individual desire of who you want to be in the world. Jake Meter quotes, so the famous statement of this is Justice Anthony Kennedy in the Supreme Court case in 1992, Planned Parenthood versus Casey. He wrote this: freedom is the capacity to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and of the mystery of human life. That's like the most classic statement of liberal individualism in all of law. It's basically, hey, you know what freedom is? It's the freedom to define your own concept of meaning and of the universe. And David Brooks in the New York Times wrote this: Professor Kennedy gives us a homework assignment that almost none of us can actually fulfill. Each of us has to define our own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and of the mystery of human life. Wow, that requires a lot of background reading. If your name is Aristotle or Nietzsche, maybe you can do it, but for the rest of us, it's going to be tough. We're busy. You wind up with a society in which the schools, the public culture, even the parents say, it's not our job to instill a shared morality and worldview from scratch. That's something you have to do on your own. The practical result, given this impossible task, is that most people wind up without a moral vocabulary, with only scattered shards of values, with no firm foundations for when times get tough. That's David Brooks, a New York Times columnist, expressing that reality, that's where that vision of life leaves us, is this: there's no shared morality, we don't have a moral vocabulary, we have no firm foundation for when times get tough. And that's what time has revealed about the post-war consensus of liberal individualism, is that we all feel that. We all feel like, okay, cool, I'm free. The good news is like, I can be whatever I want to be. How do I figure out who I want to be?
I'm free, but there's no foundation.
So Jake Meter points out, okay, so what's fraying is that post-war vision of, hey, let's build a solidarity around free market economics. It doesn't give a thick account of life together. And so we all feel it fraying. And now what's happening is, there's a new proposal being made for how we fill the gap, for how we can establish solidarity. Meter refers to this as national conservatism. That's a big term that I think maybe encompasses more people than Meter wants to. In other words, I think there are some people who would say they believe in national conservatism, but would disagree with how Meter is defining that term. But what he says is basically, this is what's happening is, you hear a lot of people now saying, hey, what actually matters is a common and we're a common and shared people. It's shared culture that matters. And in fact, how most people are defining that, or how the most provocative and persuasive people are defining it, is to define it around a shared ethnicity. You sometimes hear this pejoratively called ethno-nationalism. I think that's the most sort of stark form that it takes. But here's a quote from our vice president, J.D. Vance. He said in 2024, one of the things you hear people say sometimes is that America is an idea. And to be clear, America was indeed founded on brilliant ideas like the rule of law and religious liberty. But America is not just an idea. It is a group of people with a shared history and a common future. So you see, he's trying to ground our solidarity in the fact that we're a people with a shared history. And Stephen Wolfe takes that even further and says, I use the terms ethnicity and nation almost synonymously. No nation, properly speaking, is comprised of two or more ethnicities. So what some of these people are suggesting is, hey, the way we're going to find solidarity is get back to the sense of a nation being like a shared people with a shared heritage and a shared ethnicity. And obviously some of the darker shapes that this is taking is that this is a white, what America is a white ethno state. I don't think it always has to take that form, but this attempt to, what they're attempting to say is, how can we solve this question of American solidarity? If our solidarity can't be found in free market liberal individualism, can it be found in we're a shared people with a shared heritage and a shared ethnicity? Jake Meter says, well, there are two problems with that kind of nationalism. Number one, there are virtually no nation states today that are nations in that sense. He says, we live in a world where find me a nation in the world where everybody is the same ethnicity with the same shared cultural heritage. Here's his example. The fact that we now think of English as a certain sort of national or ethnic identity results from the fact that 1,000 years ago, King Alfred and his grandson, King Æthelstan, successfully merged many of the various kingdoms on the island of Great Britain to form, quote unquote, England. But if you had told a ninth century Mercian or Northumbrian or East Anglian that all of them shared a common nation and ethnicity, they would have laughed at you. His point is, now we think of English people as one ethnicity, but 1,000 years ago, that's not how they would have thought themselves. And second, he acknowledges that especially in America, we have established our common culture around a shared civic customs, religious identity, and a commitment to democratic life. He says basically the American experiment has never been about one ethnicity. It's always been sort of a melting pot. Mm. And so in America, trying to build solidarity around that isn't going to work. It can't work. It's contrary to our national story. The reason I want to point this out is because there are many Christians in our church, and I think Christians out there in our listening audience who perhaps are somewhat persuaded by some of this language about renewing our national identity around a shared sort of common ethnicity or a common shared being a people together.
Yeah.
Because in a sense, that's what solidarity requires. What's going to make us a people? And I want Christians to sort of roundly reject the idea that that's going to happen by doubling down on ethnicity. It's not going to happen that way. And Meter is explicit about some of both the dangers of that and the just practical unworkability of it. And so what he wants to suggest is the third vision, the third way we could reestablish solidarity in America is around a more Christian vision of what does it mean to share space together? What does it mean to be a people? And he ends his article by sort of laying out his framework of what that could look like. And that I'm not going to walk through the particulars of it because it's not the interesting part of the piece to me. You might have some thoughts there, Dusty. But what's interesting to me is that he's saying, hey, the question of how we reground American solidarity is a live question. Some people are trying to answer that we rebuild solidarity around ethnicity. That's a non-starter. I propose, says Jake Meter, that we rebuild solidarity around what he calls the work of caring for one another, or building a society where our relationships are mutually beneficial. And what's interesting to me about the language, I think the language Meter is using is still a little bit abstract, but what's interesting is he contrasts that with relationships that are exploitative. And he says, basically what you have in capitalism is the relationships are always exploitive, right? It's like, you're ultimately, Dusty, what you are is a person with some money, and I want you to spend your money on my product. And so if I'm a capitalistic free market individual, much of my relationships in society are about how can I extract some profit from you for something I'm selling or doing. And so we reduce solidarity to sort of economics. And he is suggesting another way to think about rebuilding solidarity is to focus on how do we build a society where we are mutually benefiting one another socially and not merely treating it as sort of a lowest common denominator economic trade. And I think that's an interesting question for Christians. This is an interesting question for Christians to think about. I guess another way to sort of summarize this entire podcast is to say, American solidarity is fraying. Christians need to have a meaningful answer to what can give us solidarity with our neighbors and in our society. And there's a biblical way that we have something to offer to that question. The idea of what does it mean to be human and what does it mean to share common relationships with other humans and how would we build social fabric that is mutually beneficial, where we are caring for one another and where our relationships with our neighbors are appropriately establishing a relational solidarity. I don't know if I'm expressing that as well as I could, Dusty. How would you sort of express what he's laying out here?
I do like how he, whether or not it's the answer or the third way or the next step, I'm not sure, but I do like that he is hitting on how America and capitalism has built us to be these self-sufficient people. And actually reading the comments about like, hey, in America, what you need to do is be self-made and make sure you get enough money so that when you're old, you're fine. And he pokes at that and says, actually, you've always been dependent from birth. And so one way to bring it back, or one way to maybe go forward actually, is to be okay being dependent and being kind of needy in the most appropriate way. I think that's an interesting question for Christians.
So you're getting at, yeah, the heart of what he's describing is a vision of personhood as independence,
yeah,
versus a vision of personhood as dependence.
Yep.
And another way to describe what he's saying is, yes, we as Christians, we should embrace the reality that actually every human being is dependent, and we ought to try to build a society where dependence is good, where our solidarity acknowledges that we are dependent on one another, and that's actually a good thing. Because to your point, his critique of the post-war liberal individual consensus is the goal is to be as independent as possible. Yeah. The goal is not to need anyone.
That's right.
And so where that leaves us, I mean, think about where this leaves us. Where this leaves us is, yeah, when you get old, you need to make sure you have enough money saved up to not be dependent on somebody else to care for you.
Yeah.
And that's a huge weighty concern for a lot of people. And it makes us, instead of seeing one another as like people we should care for, it makes us see it one another as just like, well, that's kind of your problem to figure out, Dusty. Hope you get that solved.
And what's interesting about that is we've gotten really used to, okay, well, I hope, Bob, that you have enough retirement so that you can enter into a retirement home. Until the very end, either you're going to run out of money or we're going to have to take care of you. We've just grown. That's okay. Now that's how our individualism, that's where it's gotten us.
Yeah.
And so I do like that he's poking holes in that and saying like, what would it look like actually for us to love one another in a way that I am dependent upon you and you're dependent upon me and we're going to take care of one another until the very end. That's a brand new way of thinking.
So my fear is that to this point, this podcast can sound pretty abstract to listeners. We're talking about a huge question, a huge problem, American solidarity. We all know that it's fraying and we're all wondering, what do we do about that? And maybe we're not going to, by listening to this podcast and doing a few things, solve the problem of American solidarity.
That'd be great if we could.
I think where we can start though is what you just said, Dusty. If you ask, okay, how can I as a listener to this podcast just go take a small little personal step toward renewing the kind of solidarity it would take for us to be a society. it's what you just said. It's embracing the fact that I am a dependent person.
Yeah.
And the people around me are also dependent creatures. And so we can start there. We can start with embracing that and helping our friends and neighbors embrace that. Simple realities of being dependent on one another. You know, I think about this. There's actually ways that this is intuitively clear to us when we, you know, when you go shovel your neighbor's driveway after a big snow or something. There's ways we just lean on each other, ways we help each other. If you have friendly neighbors who just like to, you know, pick your mail up for you while you're out of town on vacation or whatever. It's just a sort of simple way of acknowledging the reality that that there's dependence at the heart of being human. And Meter is saying, we're going to have to raise that to the forefront if we expect to build a solidarity around something other than, do you have enough money to be totally independent for the rest of your life? Because that's not a world we want to live in. So as Christians, simply by raising, by being okay with, and by leaning into the category of dependence and asking, I guess, Dusty, in our personal friendships and in our church communities, how can we embrace dependence? How can we rely more on one another? Yeah. How can we build a community that actually embraces depending on one another? That's the way that the church can begin to be a little bit of like the shining city on a hill, the New Jerusalem, the city of God.
I see this showing up pastorally as well, because we're so individualized that I don't have any sort of dependency on any of my longings. All of my longings have to be individual. They can't be, well, like, Bob, I kind of need you. I kind of need you to help me here. Mm. Well, that is like, we see that as like crazy mature to be like, hey, I'm expressing some lack here and I'm acknowledging that.
Yeah.
The American answer to that is like, well, figure it out.
Yeah.
But I think the Christian answer to that is, hey, let's acknowledge that and see if we can help.
Let's depend on one another. This takes me back to our conversation from, I guess, last week when we did that episode on, you know, evangelical elites and that whole idea of like what we need is a system where we can like root for one another and help one another forward. That's actually a simple expression of dependence, right? If I'm going to be good in my vocation, Dusty, I'm going to need a few people along the way who believe in me and want to sort of like push me forward. Simple things like that are expressions of this kind of society. If you want to read Jake Meter's article, it's about, I printed out here in front of me and it's 11 pages. So it's a longer piece and it might be a little too, you know, down in the weeds on American conservative movements, but the essence of what he's suggesting is that we have to aim at a solidarity that's not economic and that's not on ethnicity. Mm. It's got to be built on something else. And I think that simple observation is the money in this article to me. And it's something that Christians ought to be thinking about. Those of us who are listeners in America now, we do have listeners outside of the American context, and you guys have your own problems that you get to solve in your part of the world. But for America in particularly, as we experience the ongoing fragmentation of our national identity, and as we experience a lot more tribalism and a lot more fracturing of our national unity, the question Christians need to answer is, what can we meaningfully contribute to help solve that problem? What can we bring to the table that's an answer to that? And Jake Meter is suggesting one thing we can bring to the table is the reality of dependence.
Yep.
Christians, above all people, ought to be those who say, we are contingent beings dependent on God.
Yeah.
You know, he's the one who gives us breath. And therefore, because we acknowledge our dependence on God, we can also acknowledge the fact that to be a human is to be dependent on other people. And the essence of building a healthy society is building a society where we acknowledge that dependence. You know, it's funny, Dusty, is if you think about like, what were the earliest societies economically? Instead of trading money, you bartered. Like, you might have some eggs I need and I got some wheat that you need. And so we'll just trade, you know, like we're going to, it's mutually beneficial. Those relationship of exchange are, I'm dependent on something you have and you're dependent on something I have. So that is the most fundamentally human kinds of societies are places where that kind of dependence is acknowledged and recognized.
Yeah. I remember years ago of needing a trailer a couple times a year, but not always, and not enough to go buy one. But I remember talking to a few guys and saying like, hey, what if we bought a trailer? this is a totally American thing. And it was like, well, yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, we never did it. And now I have my own trailer. Oh. But my point was like, I don't want my own trailer because yeah. I don't want to store the thing. But like if four of us bought a trailer, one of us carried the insurance, one of us, bought the plates, whatever. Like, it's not that crazy,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing we're talking about here. And I think, you know, even in our gospel community structure, if you're doing a meal in your gospel community and you're having tacos, this person's bringing meat, this person's bringing cheese, and then somehow we end up with tacos that night. Yeah. That's a small expression of what would it look like for us to do that more often?
That's good. So the putting feet to this podcast looks like this. I am aware that so many Christians right now are spending so much time on Facebook, so much time on social media, so much time watching Fox News or CNN or whatever, News Nation, whatever your news channel is, that we're constantly taking in all the fracturing and fragmentation and polarization and isolation, and it's just weighing on a lot of people. I regularly have pastoral conversations with people where they're spun up about something that I realized, yeah, that's a live issue in our society. It doesn't have, it's not to 11, but it's to 11 in your mind because you've been reading about it, thinking about it, taking in data about it. What I want to suggest to Christians who are listening to this podcast is what if instead of being the people who passively take in all the fragmentation, what if part of our vision for our life in America becomes we are going to be people who build at a micro level little networks of solidarity, the local church, our neighborhoods, our schools, friendships that we have where we have mutual relationships that can commonly benefit one another. What if we just say, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to be the people who, while everybody else is tearing the fabric apart, we're going to try to stitch it together. Now, we might just be doing that in this little corner, and it might feel like the whole blanket's getting pulled apart, and we're just trying to knit it back together in this little corner. But I think when we stand before the Lord Jesus Christ, that's a meaningful contribution to try to make. None of us can solve the problem of American solidarity.
Yeah, sure.
But what we can do is, in our own little corner of the world, contribute to and create relationships of thick solidarity. I think that's what the local church is to be, and what I want listeners to feel invited to and compelled to is, how can we go do that? Because it would be so much more fruitful for us and for our souls than constantly taking in the fragmentation and the polarization that we see all around us. This isn't the only answer to the question. It's not the only thing we need to do, but I think it was an interesting call from Jake Meter in this article, and it just made me think in a different way about the contribution we can make to the fundamental problem in our society, which is a lack of a decline in solidarity.
While you were talking, Bob, I was reminded of Philippians chapter 2, verse 21. Kind of verses 19 and through 30 Paul's just kind of talking like Paul will do sometimes. But verse 21, he says, they all seek their own interest, not those of Jesus Christ. And he's talking about Timothy and Epaphroditus.
Interesting.
And that verse has always haunted me.
Yeah.
Because he's just kind of talking in there. And then that verse has always just popped at me as like, oh shoot. He's saying you can't just not be selfish as a Christian. He's saying you're going to actually be interested into this conversation, the needs of others around you, and to your point, like pulling together, knitting together this corner of the blanket, you're going to be looking to the needs of others because that's what Christians do.
That's amazing. Yeah. I hope this helps you think in a more constructive way about some of the issues plaguing the culture and the world around us. The fact is we are struggling to maintain solidarity in America. That's why James Davison Hunter wrote this book, Democracy and Solidarity. But we have a chance to meaningfully solve that problem, or at least contribute to a solution rather than being part of the problem. And so I hope this conversation spurs you in that direction.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, thank you for listening in. We pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context.
We always love to hear from listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.